Hi, I'm Emily Abbott, the founder of The Brain Possible. We've created this space, our website, and this podcast to offer hope, to explore possibility over limitations, and to create community for families of exceptional children like yours. This is personal to me. I know firsthand that great change cannot come from a place of hopelessness. My son Carter's life taught me to run full steam ahead in the opposite direction of limitations and never to be's. In this work, we know we are not providing one specific solution to one specific problem. We're doing something more, moving toward a transformation of spirit. And we try to spread that message, one connection at a time. Here, on this podcast, we'll begin another. We're so happy that you're taking this journey with us. On the Brain Possible podcast, we talk weekly with practitioners, parents, caregivers, and experts who share their knowledge on a variety of treatments and issues that matter to you. Our guest today is Jim Sporleader. Jim retired in 2014 as principal of Lincoln High School in Walla Walla, Washington. Under Jim's leadership, Lincoln High School became a trauma-informed or trauma-responsive school, gaining national attention due to a dramatic drop in out-of-school suspensions, increased graduation rates, and the number of students going on to post-secondary education. These dramatic changes at Lincoln caught the attention of Jamie Redford, who spent a year filming the documentary Paper Tigers, which tells the Lincoln story. The documentary was released at the May 2015 Seattle International Film Festival and received positive reviews. Jim is currently working as a trauma-informed coach and consultant and is based in Walla Walla, Washington. Thank you so much for joining me today, Jim. It's a pleasure to have you, and it's an honor to meet you, and I'm obsessed with your documentary. It's beautifully done, and it's such a powerful story.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today, and I think the documentary, I mean, who would have known that Paper Tigers is truly the tool that has really opened up the conversation around the country with schools on how to become trauma responsive, or schools seeing that trauma responsive is a way in which and a pathway in which we can get the results that we've been seeking for so long with kids. And I give full credit to Jamie Redford and his amazing ability to tell a story with a very complex issue,
right?
Like trauma and. And of course, I always want to acknowledge my staff. It could never have happened if staff had not come together around this new approach that nobody had heard about at that time. And I'm eternally grateful for them, and could not have done it without them.
Yeah. Well, we do actually get questions quite a bit about trauma, and I think it's becoming a bigger conversation, more widely spoken about, and also people are realizing the effects, maybe because of the research and people speaking up on children and how they need to be brought up and treated and cared for and interacted with. So I'm really excited to get started. To start, can you tell us a little bit about Lincoln High School? How long were you principal there, and what was it like before you made positive changes at the school?
Well, I was at the middle, one of two middle schools here in Walla Walla, and it was actually my dream job. You know, I started out teaching special ed and then went into administration, first becoming the assistant principal, then being the principal. So I was in my 22nd year, and remembering specifically a day that I was walking through the hallway, the bell had rung, and I just happened to walk by the classroom where I had started, and remember just being very grateful and thankful that I was in a building that I was going to be able to retire in, knowing that, you know, how many people start in a building and get to retire in the same building. And I was hiring alumni kids at that time. Was very, very motivated at what we were doing as a school. And then I had a visitor come by and see me. And to this day, I don't know why he picked me. And we've actually become friends. And he doesn't know why he came by to see me when I've asked him. But he brought by a report. He was a consultant, and he did an assessment on our alternative programs. And he wanted to drop off his assessment to me. And, you know, like I said, I mean, he was in my office, very nice man. But in my mind, I was thinking, why are you bringing this to me? And, but I read the report, and it was extremely painful. I knew about our alternative high school. It wasn't called Lincoln at the time. It was called Payne Alternative High School. And I knew it was used as a dumping school. I knew that if we had high profile cases with a teacher, if they were able to come back to work, they were transferred to Payne. I knew that the traditional high school used Payne as a way of getting rid of kids they didn't want to have. But in reading that report, Dan put such a voice to it. And when I read it, and kids were saying, you know, we're labeled as the bad kids, the gang kids, the dopers. Nobody cares about us. It came through very strongly that they did not feel safe coming to school. And then when you went to the adult side of it, the teachers, it just mirrored what the kids were saying. We've been labeled the bad teachers. And that was very strong, stated that they did not feel safe. And so that just gnawed at me. And I kept telling my wife, you know, the district needs to get somebody over there and do something. And I said, well, no kid should come to school and not feel safe, and nor staff. And I couldn't sleep. And finally one night she just said to me, she says, well, why don't you go? And, you know, I said, well, I'm not talking about myself. I said it's somebody else. And
I do that sometimes.
Yeah. You know, I'm a person of faith, and felt that I was being called to go there. And so I finally made an appointment with the superintendent and went down and said, I want you to transfer me to Payne. And I'll never forget, he looked at me and said, with the career you've had at Garrison, why in the world would you want to go there? And my response was, well, have you read the report?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was decided that I would transfer there the following school year. And they had removed the current principal, and they had put a brand new intern into the building to fill that spot till the end of the school year. And I knew the young man. He was just a wonderful kid. And I kept track of him and would call him. I could tell he was extremely overwhelmed. I knew he was in over his head. He just didn't have the experience. And he wanted to go on a field trip, but said he just couldn't go. And I said, well, I'll come over for 2 days. I mean, it'll give me a chance to connect with the kids, and why don't you go and let me come over for 2 days? And so we arranged that, and I'm telling you, Emily, I walked over. Yeah, I went there with high expectations of really being able to connect with the kids, excited about that opportunity, and was out there to greet them the morning they came to school. Went to give them high fives, and my hand was the only one in the air, and tried to sit down at the table, lunch table, the breakfast table, and get some conversations going, and they wouldn't talk to me. And as school started, in just 2 days, my chin literally was just glued to my chest. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was the most out of control environment that I'd ever had stepped into. And I was I had a traditional mindset with discipline. And in 2 days, I suspended 12 kids. So it was so crazy. And I went back to the superintendent and said, you got to move me now. I can't wait till the fall, uh-huh. which he turned me down. And I kept going back, and he got mad at me and what don't you understand about no? I'm tired of you coming in here. I've told you no. You need to wait till fall. And I just shared with him. I said, well, I'll quit coming in if you'll go down to the school and talk to the staff and ask them if they're feeling safe. And I also had a plan for the intern on how we could make him have a positive experience in another opportunity. And so I got to give him credit. He did go down and talk to staff. And that afternoon he called me up and says, you can go. And so I actually went over during the year, and it wasn't until about April that I was finally, they let me go. And I'm telling you, there were days I didn't know if I was going to make it or not. The disregard for authority, just the traditional response of any request was F you. Mm-hmm. And the gang tension in the building was intense. You walked in, you could feel it. And every day that I went there, I knew that we were going to have a spark. And when that spark happened, then you had a forest fire very quickly. And the chief of police came and met with me, and I had known him for years. And he says, how can I support you? He said, I'm having a hard time keeping the community safe because of the amount of calls that my officers are being called to Payne. And he said, how can we work together? And that ended up becoming a partnership with the police department with an SRO on campus. But it wasn't until it wasn't until late May that finally I had kids that finally started to see that I was there to advocate for them. And it was that broken record conversation that I'm here to create an environment in which you feel valued and that you feel safe. And it wasn't in the report, but I added, and also a place of learning so that we can help you progress and get your high school diploma. And I would say the second year, I could confidently say that we had created a relationship with the kids that they knew. They felt safe. However, the the gang issue took 2 years to really get on top of that. They'd run the school for so long and just did not want to give that up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I started adding activities. I had to meet with them in small groups and say, hey, I want to make this school a regular school. I want you guys to be able to have assemblies. And I said, right now I can't bring you all together for an assembly because we're going to have a fight. I was at a point where I was able to say, hey, I'm going to bring in an assembly for you. If you guys are appropriate and can show that we can come together around this, I'll keep adding more and more. Told them we'd have a prom. They'd never had a prom before. And the same thing, if we get through a prom and you guys can show that you appreciate that and understand our motivation for doing it for you, then we'll have another prom. Mm-hmm. And then I added some sports with the same message. And once we started providing them with some of those extras and their learning day was the district had pulled out all the electives and put them on computer programs, and you know, for high risk kids it doesn't work. And so it
doesn't work for any kid, really. Yes. I don't think so. I haven't seen
there's very few kids I've seen that computer learning works. And
can you talk a bit about ACEs, or the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study? How does childhood trauma and toxic stress affect the brain? Sounded like we've got the picture now, and there was a lot of toxic stress and trauma going on in that school, which must stem from their whole life experience. And how is it related to other health conditions later in life? So the brain and other health related.
Well, I was exposed to ACEs. In fact, we actually had an assembly where we had a person come in and talk about them. But to be very honest with you, it was just somebody talking about them. That's about mm-hmm. all it was for me.
Okay.
In my third year, I was invited to go to a conference by our community leader, who was really working to get ACEs awareness throughout the community. And it was at that conference that I heard Dr. John Medina, and it's the first time that I had somebody just pounded in the impact of adverse childhood experiences and how it impacted the brain. And it blew away my paradigm of that I believed behavior was a choice, and I believed very strongly that I had to match appropriate traditional consequences to those choices and teach responsibility. And when I learned that these kids were coming with such high stress that their brains weren't even in a position to be able to process physiologically being able to problem solve. They weren't in the part of the brain that allowed them to do that. That blew my paradigm about behavior being a choice. Dr. Medina, world known, pounded away that, you know, it's not a choice. It's out of their control. Well, that blew another paradigm out. Yeah. And then when he shared, these kids physiologically cannot learn, problem solve, it's out of their control, and they're coming to us 24/7 with their brains full of flooded with cortisol and they're in the fight, flight, freeze mode. And Emily, that was back in 2010. And I it was a 90 minute keynote, but he turned me upside down. I mean, I to this day, I can't really articulate how powerful that hit me, but what it did was it showed me that I was still using traditional ways of discipline, and that meant that I was punishing, which meant that I was hurting kids, not helping them.
Yeah.
In a manner. And so that shift to understand that I had to give those kids time to calm down, and that I had to be calm before we could even begin the conversation. And from the very first kid that I changed my approach, I told a teacher to F off. That was an automatic 3-day suspension. You know, I'd tell kids why we can't talk to teachers that way. It's the first time the kid came in, instead of going in and telling them what they did wrong and why it's wrong and giving them their 3-day. And I let them calm down before I brought them in. And when I brought them in, I just said, "What's going on?" You know, and from that very first kid, when I said, "What's going on?" he told me, and it had nothing to do with school. It was he told me a very painful story about about his dad and how his dad let him down, and he had a traumatic event that morning. And so, it hit me. Oh my God, I would have given him a 3-day suspension, never heard the story. And here now, I was able to validate his voice and his feelings, and it connected us. And every kid that came in from that point on, then when I said, "What's going on? What's happening?" They were eager to get it off their chest when they were calm.
Yeah.
And I really understood that I had to stay regulated. And, you know, I used to trigger. And so it was the fuel, that fed the fire within me to want more. Because the conversations I was having with kids and the connections that we were developing, and then me being able to teach them about their stress and about options and what they could do to help calm themselves down and choices that they could make, it became a very teachable moment. And then seeing kids access those strategies was powerful. And I found that in school consequences were having a much more powerful impact than out of school consequences. And the kids truly, when I gave them the consequence at the end of the conversation, they were wanting to make it right because they were heard out. And they didn't feel good about what they had done. They were eager to try to mend that. And it was powerful. And my teachers were experiencing that in the classroom. And our whole culture began to change. And the kids that were the revolving door kids that I did a lot of suspensions on, all of a sudden were kids that I started connecting with and developing relationships. And man, like you shared, ACEs have such an incredible impact on our kids. And if we can understand that the behavior is coming from outside of school, it manifests itself in school, it triggers in school, mm-hmm. but the stress is coming from outside of school. And secondly, not taking the behavior personally, to understand that there's a cause and a reason behind the behavior,
mm-hmm.
and to seek that cause. Wow, just incredible conversations with kids. And that's where we were able to wrap support around them. I mean, we're fortunate that we had our own health center. I had professional counselors on available. And that's where we were able to advocate to wrap support around them with what they were going through, and still holding them accountable. But the accountability was learning and connection. Like I said, it was so much more effective than putting them out and never knowing what the cause was.
Wow. So that is a powerful revelation that you had there. And I know that we've had people here on the podcast talking about, you know, mindful parenting even, and it's very similar even with all children. Every single day when they're throwing tantrums and stuff, it's not actually, or if they decide to act out or hit someone, their sibling, it's not really, the problem isn't actually you should just discipline that child right away. I've heard a lot about you need to get down on their level and ask them what's going on and show them attention and care. It's not easy to do, but I really commend you taking initiative for the kids at school, because, you know, most parents don't do that. I don't do that as much as I should do that. And if these kids don't have a safe home or a good environment, or they've got a lot of heavy stuff going on at home, school needs to be a safe place for them.
You know, you bring up a good point. My, one of my daughters, was a trauma coach for her school. It's the highest poverty, percentage, elementary school here in Walla Walla. And, she ran her calm room for 3 years, and it just absolutely blew me away at how she was able to take those young kids, kindergarten kids, first grade, and how she was able to create a safe environment. But, you know, the little guys sometimes don't have the language to tell you exactly what's going on, but her ability to create the safety and the tools for those little ones to start to calm down, that once they were calmed down, you know, I remember telling me a story about Elijah who just was blown up the classroom. She had to actually physically go in and carry him out. And she had a relationship with him, but I mean, he was just screaming and swearing at her, mm-hmm. and telling her to let him go. And she just said, she just looked him in the eye and she just kept saying, "Elijah, breathe with me. You know, and I don't want to breathe." Mm-hmm. And she just kept that repeat. And she said, finally, by the time they got down to the calm room, she says, "He started pattering my breathing and not really knowing it. But as he calmed, then she said, Elijah, you love to do the drain breathing exercise. That's your favorite. So let's do that." Well, he was calm enough that then he started to do his breathing exercise. And then he collapsed in her lap and said, I just want the blue house. And she was asking him, Elijah, tell me about the blue house. And then finally it came out, I miss my mom.
Mm, oh, and, gosh.
And through that, whatever triggered that in class, whether it was could have been a blue crayon, who knows?
Yeah.
But she finally was able to understand that the blue house was the last time he saw his mom. Mm. And it was when they lived in the blue house. And she knew that mom was in prison, so it was a drug-related issue. But what she was able to get from these little ones just blew me away. And it was the same approach I was using with the older ones, but the language was framed differently, but the same strategies. And so
Yeah.
It just reinforced with me that we can take the little ones and we can help them just as much as we can the older ones.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a positive trauma-informed school model. What does that look like?
I like to change the terminology a little bit.
Okay.
Because, as you know, we have a national wave on trauma-informed. That's a good thing. But I think it's been such a big wave in the term trauma-informed. I think there's a lot of misconceptions around that, that I go to a one-day training on trauma.
Right.
And then I feel like I'm trauma-informed. And
there's a wide spectrum of what that is. But what did it look like for you in your school?
Well, the terminology I like to use is trauma responsive.
Mm.
You know, I'm trauma informed. I've gotten the information. And so when I do trainings, I said, okay, we're trauma informed. Now let's put it into practice. Let's put it into action. So that's responsive.
Yeah.
And just in simple terms to me, being a trauma responsive school or agency, to me, it applies everywhere, is that I truly understand what I call the power of one. And the research is so profound and so supportive that we know that just one caring adult can change the life path of a child or a teenager or an adult who has a history of trauma. And through that relationship, it develops resiliency and models resiliency. And so if I understand the power of one, then I'm seeking as many positive relationships as I possibly can have with those around me. And if one adult has the potential of helping a child or teenager or adult go from hopelessness to hope, that's a pretty powerful opportunity. And at Lincoln, as we began to understand how powerful the relationships were, then the conversation, and I believe the conversation never stops, it continues in a trauma responsive environment, is how many more caring adults can we wrap around this kid?
Mm-hmm.
And so some of our kids that were, what we called it, student of concerns, that were drawing the most attention, our action plan was to put people in the day who purposefully would make a positive interaction with that student, so that that student we know had 3 to 4 intentionally positive interactions from an adult. And whether it was through passing time, catching the kid walking by, just, you know, bringing them over and just simply, it's so good to see you today. We're so glad that you're here. Just simple things. And that created a school culture that was so powerful. And what made it even more powerful is that as the kids bought into the culture, then they started contributing to the culture. And a new student could not come and sit at a table at lunch or breakfast by themselves. Kids would see that and go over and invite them to come to their table. Guests that would come on site, our kids would greet them. They'd hold the door open for them. Our office was on the second floor. They would say, can I help you? Are you trying to find the office? Can I help you there? We'd have patrons come for visits. And while they were there, kids would stop, shake their hands, greet them. And it would blow our guests away because they had that preconception of 20 some years of that school being, you know, reading in the paper about the gang fights and the fights outside of school. And I forgot to mention, you know, one thing that we did right away is we let the kids pick a new name for the school, because we knew if we were going to change the culture, even when we were traditionally mindset, that we needed to change the name and get a new start. So the kids picked the Lincoln name. But it was just interesting to see patrons come in, and it was kind of like, I know you changed the name, but they knew what the history was. And after being at the school, I had patrons just say, can't explain it, but you know, I actually was scared to come here, and there's something going on here in this school. There's a great feeling here. And I believe that our kids, as they bought into the culture and they invested into the culture, it completed the circle.
Wow. Gosh, you're over here giving me chills. This is so beautiful. How many kids were in the school or in each grade?
We started out when I first got over there with about 55.
Per grade?
No, total.
Total.
And my last year we had 220. The exciting thing, I think, the transition there is that kids were asking to come to Lincoln versus being forced to come.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting part of that was kids who would have been forced to come were asking to come before they were being forced. But also an interesting thing transpired is that those kids, the word got out, they loved their school, and then they started telling their friends about it. So we had kids who just didn't fit maybe the traditional school model that were going in and asking to transfer to Lincoln, who were passing their classes at the traditional high school. And the traditional high school, that was really difficult to have a kid that was on track to graduate asking to leave their school. Or we have very bright kids that just didn't fit the mold and they were failing, that would ask to come to our school, and they would catch up very quickly and excel. So our graduation rates went from 18% in that first year to 73%, which was, 79%, which was higher than the regular school average in the state.
My gosh. Well, everyone just wants attention and love. Everyone does. And they might not even know that they do, but I think we all need it and crave it. And something you just said about the traditional school model, it doesn't fit for every kid. I 100% agree with that. I think that I would love to see more inclusive environment for all types of learners. And it's difficult, I imagine.
You know, there's more and more schools seeking to be trauma informed or responsive. But this pandemic has really, to me, has interfered with that mindset because of the high level of stress teachers are feeling right now. And when we get stressed, we go back to what we know best. And unfortunately, that's our traditional mindset. And so punishment comes back in.
Yeah.
I've got a school in Kansas, a district that I refer all the time when schools call and say, that are in their journey and they say, hey, is there another school that we can contact? And I refer to this school district. And just a couple months ago, they contacted me and said, Jim, man, we've gotten knocked off our path. We got to get back on. And unfortunately, my flight was canceled and I wasn't able to make the trip back. And we're having to reschedule. But teacher stress and staff turnover, they feel like they've gone back to a little bit more of a traditional mindset. And they want to get, they saw all the benefits of the trauma responsive. And
it's hard because if the teacher or anyone at work they have nothing left to pour out because they've given so much and they're dealing with illnesses at home and all the little stressors that have come over the last 2 years. It's hard for them to pour out when they go to work every day for these kids. It takes so much patience. So you retired from being principal of Lincoln High School in 2014. Can you tell us about the consulting work that you've been doing since then?
Yeah, it started out that I was doing a lot of work around Walla Walla, and then started to get some calls out of state. And then by my second year out, and with the movement, especially after Paper Tigers was released, I was traveling full time, and I've continued to be able to do the work. You know, it started out once the pandemic hit, the work do this virtually, but that virtual, I think, has kind of run its course a little bit. Because of the pressure the teachers have with them trying to run virtual classrooms. And I think people honestly are burned out with virtual. And and then to get face to face with school districts right now, it's time. You got to hit it on a staff development day, and districts have maybe one or two a year. So there just isn't the opportunity right now that before I couldn't keep up with the opportunities. You know, I was having to turn down a lot of work. And now.
Yeah, the virtual burnout.
Yeah, you know, I'm probably from 2 years ago, I'm probably doing maybe 25%. Yep. What I was doing, and the painful part is that our teachers need this more now than ever.
Yes.
And our kids need it now more than ever. I can just imagine what it's been like for them. I saw on Facebook the other day of a contact of mine that showed a picture of a woman's grandson sitting on a bench with a blanket around him, trying to do his trying to do his virtual work on a computer because he was outside of a public domain in which he was able to pick up the Wi-Fi, because where he lived, he didn't have Wi-Fi, and just broke my heart. And we forget that for many of these kids, they either don't have Wi-Fi to do the virtual learning, and the homes are so chaotic and unsafe. Those kids don't want to be in the home, and it's dangerous. And I think sometimes we've lost sight of that. And so kids who weren't connected, I think we've labeled them as, well, they're just lazy, not doing the work, versus they're so stressed, not knowing how to do the work, how to be engaged in a virtual environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a real thing. And everyone is going to school every day. as you and I were just talking about before we started, and the teachers are dealing with this illness every single day and how to deal with it. And the at times there's temperature checks and there's mask wearing and this person's calling out and that person's calling out and we've got to fill these positions in these places. We have to cancel these events. And where do they get the time to pause and to reset and to take care of themselves, to acknowledge this and to take care of the children and pour out to those children? And it's not sustainable. It's sad. So my next question was, how can schools or any individual become trauma-informed? And as you said, also responsive, that's the part where you're doing the work. Where do they start to become a center for healing?
Well, I think because that we do have this national movement, and I do believe that many people, many teachers have been exposed in some way or another with some kind of trauma-informed maybe presentation or they've had a person come in for a day. It still is a hard sell, to be honest with you. It's still people that are willing to step out of their comfort level and say, hey, what we're doing is not working. We've got to look for more effective ways. And with our staff being as stressed as they are, if they actually were able to breathe and process through and truly understand what a trauma-responsive approach is, it would actually change their environment, which would have impact on their students' environment. Obviously, it's not easy to stay regulated when you have dysregulated kids around you. However, if I stay regulated, then that's where the teaching begins, to start teaching kids how to regulate. And then that draws connection and that draws relationships. And I believe then our teachers will start experiencing a much more rewarding environment. It doesn't mean that it's easy, but the efforts will pay off. Mm-hmm. Whereas right now, if I'm in a dysregulated and having a very difficult time getting myself regulated, then it's kind of brings those same results, you know. I'm dysregulated. The kids are dysregulated. What the heck do I do? Or get this kid out of here. He's disrupting the class. I can't teach. That's a pattern that will keep on happening. Whereas if we can still make that mind shift, even in this chaos, I can change the chaos, but it takes that mind shift of knowing that, man, as much as I'm hurting, I want to be the caring adult in this kid's life so they don't have to hurt.
Yeah, it does take quite a bit of effort, again and again and again. And then I suppose at what point does it ever become natural? When you first got in there and started doing this, when did you start to feel like everyone was on board and you've done this enough and you've spoken to the kids enough and it was your natural response to be the way that you were now being?
First, you know, it's important to share that not everybody gets on board.
Yes.
You have some naysayers, but I always say that before you start the journey, you got to be at 75-80% of staff saying, this is the way we want to go. You got to have the majority. And once you have the majority, and that mind shift happens, then that's when the momentum begins, starts up. I always say the conversation never ends and the learning never stops. So the conversations are always wrapped around what can we do for this kid, and seeking their voice. When kids know that you value their voice and you validate their feelings, it just naturally brings a me with you connection. And that's where change starts to happen. And so for us, as we were putting the plane together as we were flying, but it was the conversations, again, that was the fuel that we wanted more because of what the kids were sharing. And us being able to start wrapping support around them and seeing the relationship build, it meant the kid that was disrupting classes, the disruptions got further and further apart.
Yes.
Some of the disruptions stopped. Others were dealing with such stress, they knew that if they were having a bad day, we were going to be there for them. And they knew that they were going to be held accountable and they wanted to be held accountable.
Mm-hmm.
That just kept the momentum going. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, I know for some it may be hard to believe, but with me, again, it started with the very first kid. And it was a wow moment. And the more kids I talked to that before, you know, they'd come in and I'd take them in, escalated, and I would trigger because, you know, they were effing this and effing that. And I just knew, my God, I was sending kids out and never knowing what the story was. And once I began to be able to find the story and teach them, we've got to teach them about their brains and what stress does and how to bring themselves into a regulated state, because a regulated student is an engaged student, and that's where learning can take place. A dysregulated student physiologically cannot take in new knowledge or problem solve. It's like they're in the trunk of the car and we're asking them to drive. It's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And we know if we provide opportunities for these kids to calm down, we can get them out of the trunk and we can walk them to the driver's seat and start teaching.
Mm, that's beautiful. What are some memorable moments from your time at Lincoln, in that when you entered that beauty phase and you started being like, oh my gosh, look what that kid just did. Look who the level that they just rose up to.
Boy, there are so many. And also I have to, you always preface that is that there were some very painful moments too, because you love these kids so deeply. I would say, just the other day, I had a student send me a text, and I had her in middle school. She had her first child at the end of sixth grade. She had her second child before ninth grade. And she was a handful. I always loved that kid, but she was a handful. And when our paths crossed at Lincoln, I always saw she had a beautiful heart, but man, she had a short fuse. And I had to have her arrested for, in one instance, on an assault that was horrible. And when I told her, Karen, man, I just can't let this one go, she said to me, I understand. She's always understand that what she did was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And but now she's 35, and she just sent me a text telling me that her journey has been difficult, but now she's a caretaker for adults and she's a caretaker for kids with disabilities. And she told me how much she loves her work. And she said to me, Sproider, they even asked for me as the caregiver. And she says, I've grown so much that I've talked to my husband, and I'm going to go back to school and become a teacher. Because she says, even though I gave my teachers hell in school, she said, school was my safe spot. And I used to dream about, where can I hide at school so I don't have to go home? And she says, the sexual abuse, the physical and emotional abuse was so overwhelming. And it just hit me that even in turmoil, even though she was giving the school a difficult time, and she was talking about elementary school, that she was able to verbalize, that was my safe spot. I didn't want to go home. And we have so many kids that need a safe spot. Yeah. And if we can provide that, and for her, it's been a process, but she's kept gotten on her feet, and look where she is now. Yeah. I mean, a loving adult who truly understands the pain that kids are going through. And she says, I want to be their safe spot.
Wow.
That's so powerful. And
it's a ripple effect.
I have 2 million kids that handle my website. Both of them come from histories of family, drug addiction, incarceration. And they're both going to finish up their computer science degree this year. And they started a cookie business downtown, and it's so successful. It's just an incredible story. And they talk about Lincoln being a place that they felt they were able to find hope. Mm-hmm. And it's the resiliency, it's the relationship that provides the hope that gives them the inward motivation and optimism to be able to look to the future. So, I mean, I could go on and on. Yeah. with stories like that. And, you know, we lost kids. But you never give up, because a lot of kids that we lost in their senior year to drug addiction, a lot of those kids have gotten back on their feet. They're sober today. Mm-hmm. And then we obviously have some that are still in horrible struggle, and we've lost some to suicide. So there's pain along the way, but I think we take that pain and try to, a friend of mine says, take pain and turn it into propane.
Yeah.
And use that as a motivation to continue reaching out.
I really am just visualizing that ripple effect that you had on each child and student there. And of course, you couldn't do it for all of them, but your numbers and statistics show that you were able to transform the lives of so many hundreds. And then their life goes on, and they touch other people with how their experiences and what they learned from the school. And that's the way it works.
You know, I use that ripple effect as an illustration when I'm training, but I also share that our motivation was to transform our kids' lives, but our kids actually transformed our lives at a deeper level.
Yes.
Than what we were able to even give to them. And it's the ripple effect goes both ways.
Right.
It's so so fulfilling to see these kids succeed and then to see the impact that they have on our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And
how can our audience find out more about you and your work?
Well, my website's jimsporleaderconsulting.com. I guess that's the starting point.
Yeah. And watch the documentary.
Yeah.
Paper Tigers on YouTube.
You know, 2015 is when that was released, and to see the impact that it continues to have, and you would I thought it would run its course, you know, and it hasn't. And the amount of people that have not seen it still, educators that still have not seen the film, there's a much larger number than what I would have predicted, but it continues to be a tremendous tool and conversation piece and a motivational piece to seek out how can we become like Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
And the schools that I'm aware of that truly have taken on a trauma responsive approach have experienced every bit of positive impacts that we had at Lincoln.
Wow.
Test scores go up, attendance rates go up, graduation rates go up, suspensions go way down, discipline goes way down. All the data points that you want to see go up, and the ones you want to see go down. Mm-hmm. And it just keeps getting stronger and stronger as a school comes together around this approach.
Is there anything else that you would like to say today to the Brain Possible community to be complete?
I guess I would end with truly understand the power of one, the power that each one of us has to be a caring person in anybody's life. And I truly believe it's a mindset that drives us to seek positive interactions with whoever we cross paths with. And with me, though I'm not in a building every day, it means the person at the grocery store. It means my Uber driver. It means the person who cleans my room at the hotel. It's whoever I come into contact. The simplest positive comment of connection, you never know the true impact of how it could impact a person's life. And so I think being mindful of that, to know that letting people know that you notice them, you appreciate them, they're working hard, and you thank them. It might be just a one-time connection. You never know the impact that could have with what that person's going through.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today and diving into all this heavy stuff with me. There's a lot going on right now, always has been. And as you said, it's harder now than ever for educators and students alike in those schools.
Well, thank you for your work. And I thank everybody that's a part of this work and this movement. To me, we're all on the same team, and we're all supporting one another in whatever role that person plays to get the word out and to change traditional mindsets to a trauma responsive mindset. It can only have positive impacts on your life, and it brings such joy, and especially to have those connections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the power of one. Thank you for listening to the Brain Possible podcast. Be sure to tune in every Wednesday for more empowering wisdom, expert advice, and inspiring stories. And be sure to subscribe and follow on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss that one episode that holds the answer you've been searching for. And if you feel inspired, we would love for you to rate and review us so that we have the opportunity to reach more people. You can also visit thebrainpossible.com for more information on conditions, therapies, products, and practitioners that can help your family in their journey. Thank you for spending your precious time with us at The Brain Possible. See you next week, and be well.